This is the Visual Developers Podcast with your hosts, Matt Varghese and Ben Parker. From maker interviews to tutorials and more, we're here to talk about all things no code.
Hi, everybody. Ben here with Visual Dev FM, and we're back for another episode. And excited to roll out a new episode this week with my co-hosts, Lacey and Matt.
Hello.
Hola.
As always, they're here to talk about everything no code with me, and we're excited. We missed last week, and we just want to say sorry. But with coronavirus, I'm sure everybody understands kind of how life has changed for everyone. And so some interviews that we had scheduled and some things that we had planned ended up shifting just kind of beyond our control. And so we're kind of getting back to just a normal now. We're just going to keep rolling out episodes. Our Include Her month has been rudely interrupted. We are going to revisit that later this year. And so don't worry, that is not something we are forgetting about at all. We're going to jump back and tackle that. And in fact, we've had a few interviews with some awesome guests that we absolutely cannot wait for you to hear from. Some really great people in the no-code space and influencers. And we're slowly kind of rescheduling some of those too. Some folks just aren't in the headspace to be able to talk about normal no-code, and I completely get that. So what we want to do is do our best to distract you from everything that's happening. And so we do have some things we're going to talk about tonight kind of in regards to that. In fact, our whole episode as far as the post no-code roundup content is going to be about the OK for OK site that Matt and I were able to work on together. So Matt, Lacey, and I are just going to kind of talk to the details of what it was like building that and some of the things that we did. Matt and I actually did a hackathon, which was really fun. We're trying to figure out some of Zapier Integromat stuff. So no worries, we're back. We'll be back every week now. As long as things don't descend into more chaos, but our plan is to be here with you every week and continue this on, and we'll get things back scheduled. And some of our topics may, some of our episodes soon may be more topic centered than interview centered as we try to figure out how to get guests back and focused on things. We don't want guests to have episodes on record where most of what they talked about was coronavirus. So we want to make sure it's good for them, good for us, and good for you, and a nice distraction. So anyway, that being said, before we jump into the meat of today's episode, which is the OK for OK site that we got to work on, we're going to start with our no code roundup. So first things out of the box, and we have a lot to cover because it's been a week or two, right? So a no-code video now out of, and I'm, Ray, I'm so sorry, I'm going to mispronounce your name. Ray Tirado? Is that, I feel like that's right. I'm just going to say Ray. Ray created no-code video, which is really awesome. You can find them on Twitter, at no-code video, or go to the domain no-code.video. It's really cool because right now in this space, I really feel like, you know, there are communities and there are kind of schools and guidance pieces and all these different things. We had a no code video channel from our very own Lacey. I feel like was kind of the first person to do this. So props to Lacey, but hers was more centered around just like kind of talking about the content, which is really cool. And this is more focused on video interviews. So this is kind of new for the no code community. And I really hope that everybody goes to nocode.video, checks it out. Go hit the follow button at no code video. Make sure you're checking for that new content because it's going to be really awesome. And I'm super excited about it.
I think Ray's background is in like video production too. So I think that the production quality and the production value is going to be really, really high here. I'm looking forward to it. I think his first interview is with Joe Krug from FinSuite or FinSuite, however you pronounce it. I'm looking forward to it. I got to check that out because I'm sure that's a lot of valuable content there.
I like when people see FinSuite. It sounds fancy.
I think that's how it's pronounced. Because when I talked to Joe briefly a couple of weeks ago, and I called it FinSuite, and he called it FinSuite. And so I was like, oh, okay, I guess I'm saying it wrong. And I've been saying it wrong. But I mean, at the end of his videos, his tagline is, that's FinSuite. And so maybe it's both. Maybe both are acceptable pronunciations.
Maybe it means FinSuite, like, I don't know. Let's say like fintech, but that doesn't really fit.
And we'll have him on one of these days to clarify.
To ask all those questions. Okay.
There we go.
Yeah, good stuff. But go check that out. I think it's going to be really, really cool. It's time for your regular no-code roundup dose of Glide updates. And so buckle in. They've got cool stuff. If you haven't seen it yet, Glide now has the ability for users to log in, sign in with Google Sign-On. So if you have an app that has authentication, it requires users to sign in. Now, instead of signing in with, you know, sign-up email, password, they have to type everything in. They can just click a button, sign in with a Google account, and then they're good to go. They've logged into your account. It's secure for them. It's secure for you. Easier for your users. I think it's really going to help people make apps that are completely next level. Like, you know, I was fiddling around with some ideas, and I'm looking forward to building some things with this because I think it's such a cool feature. I was really excited to see this. Lacey?
I'm just curious, how do they ship this much this fast? Like, I really want to know what's going on in the inner workings of Glide. Are they sleeping? Are they being, you know, like, how many people do they have back there? You know, are they doing magic? Like, I don't know what's going on, but something is going on where they can push out stuff this often, this quickly, one right after another. And they're pushing out like significant things. It's not like, hey, we changed the color. You know, they're pushing out significant development pieces here. So I just, you know, hats off to them. Everything they put out is awesome. So.
Now, I completely agree. Like, the speed and the momentum they're moving at on some of these features. And like you said, it's not like they're inconsequential or little or small. That's a big deal, and it means big things for people. And I'm curious how that works in native apps, but I'm assuming it does. So if you are somebody who went through the process of turning your Glide app into a native iOS app, what have you, and getting that listed in the App Store, be a big selling point, a huge feature. So cool functionality, and hats off to their team on that. They also released an update. This one's a little smaller, but they now support number and date formatting. So you do all kinds of calculations and different pieces and have charts based on numbers, which is really, really cool. And I'm excited to see this from them too. So if you're a Glide user, definitely go check those two things out. Jan, who was formerly at Webflow, he announced on Twitter he's no longer with Webflow, but now he's kind of doing his own thing, which is really, really cool and exciting. If you've seen any of his video courses, you know that they are top notch. He tweeted that he has four new videos that are live on his YouTube, a full course about how to create a simple job board with Webflow, and one that's a separate video about dynamic sharing buttons. They're all live there and all free on YouTube. And there's a website that you can clone, a job board website. And I went and checked out this website. It looks really cool. If you were looking to build a job board, this is a great place to start. And you have the benefit of these great YouTube videos to guide you through how it was built and how you could use it, how you could modify it, really leverage that and take advantage of it. So really cool stuff. Strong work, Jan. Looking forward to more awesome things from you. And we need to have you on the show some point soon to talk about all of this. So
post-corona, post-craziness.
Post-corona craziness, or maybe depending on how long this goes, if this becomes new normal, maybe he'll be here to
fair point
later. We'll see. Yep. I don't know. Who knows? So that's cool stuff from Jan. Excited to see it. There are also Adalo updates. So Adalo announced just a week ago, I think, that one of the most requested features that they've had is finally here, and that is maps. So you can now include maps in your Adalo apps, which is a really cool feature, and I'm super excited about. I got to play with Adalo, I don't want to say it's a couple weeks ago. I did some building in it, and it was so much fun. I really enjoy working in Adalo. It's neat. I think I enjoy the mobile building better than I do the desktop app building. You know, if when you look at the components, it still feels like desktop is an afterthought. Mobile is really the first thing on the mind. It's really great program, really great stuff. And if you haven't used it, you definitely need to check it out. And that leads us to the next tweet from Adalo, where they've got kind of a challenge going with build new code with new code and Joe, where they're trying to get people to build apps or things to help inspire people, make them smile, something that'll make a difference in your community right now with everything that's going on. So definitely go check that out. They're calling it No Code Connexus, which is really cool, a No Code Connexus challenge. And you can see that at newcode.co. Really cool. Airtable. Airtable has some awesome stuff coming. So I did a bunch of Airtable work recently, and I feel like I'm ready to try out some new things with it. So I'm glad some of this is here. I built a stacker app, which was really fun. And I built one for the podcast, but I also built another one. I don't think I've talked about it. I don't think I can talk about it. I don't know. I'll have to wait a little bit and ask if I can talk about it. I don't know if I can talk about it, but really enjoyed it. And they announced they have some new pieces out, which one of them is they ship some improvements to the long text field that allows you to style and organize your text with like headers and checkboxes and all kinds of things, which really, when you're using, you know, most of us people who are building with no code, you know, if you're trying to build an app or something, you've got this form and you want people to be able to really provide you some rich text and be able to pass it back. If you've tried to build some rich text editor outside, I think Bubble does a really good job of this, but like if you've tried to go outside of Bubble and you're trying to give people the ability to bold and italicize or whatever in a form and then submit that, you know what a challenge it is. So it's really cool to see Typeform tackling that. I think it really will help a lot of people building with no code kind of have some superpowers that they didn't have before, which is really cool. And it ties in with these new blocks they have, which, by the way, I was looking through this and Lacey and I were literally on Zoom looking at these. And when we realized some of the things that were possible, it was kind of like, oh my gosh, like head exploding. The power is pretty crazy, but they have the ability like Pexels. So Pexels is stock photos, its ability to add stock photos to your Airtable really quick. The ability to create docs with form stack out of an Airtable, which is really cool. They have a Miro HQ, integration, Loom integration, where you can watch Loom videos in there. But then they have Typeform. Typeform is the ability to import Typeform, you know, form results or form submissions in too. But if you have an Airtable and you have all the fields set up, you can literally click one button and it will create a form based off the fields in Airtable. It creates it in Typeform for you. So you can set up your Airtable however. Yes way. It's incredible. So like you can set up.
I was not thinking it was that useful. I didn't realize that's a game changer. That saves so much time.
So much time, because so many times I can't tell you how many times like you go through the whole piece and you build a form and then you build an Airtable and you map everything up or you build an Airtable and then you go build a form and you try to get everything, man, you have it. You know, the Airtable up on one side and Typeform up in another window and you're flipping between them, or you have them side by side and you're building. The ability to just kind of hit that one button and have that create. Props to the Typeform and Airtable teams. That is a really cool feature and is one I plan on using a lot. So really, really cool. Super excited to see it and definitely need to go check that out. So let's talk about Chris Spaggs just for a hot minute. So Chris, if you're listening, oh my gosh, what don't you do? Like, I don't, you're such a small team and it feels like, one, we'll get into this when we talk about the website, but we used JetBoost. You know, I've seen it in action. I've seen what it can do and we've talked about it here and how powerful it is, but I hadn't truly built with it until we built this OK for OK site. And the experience that I had building with JetBoost was phenomenal. And I think an appropriate word to use is glee. Like, it was so much fun. Like, when we were literally on a Zoom call building and walking through it, and the animations were super pleasing, the directions and onboarding were okay. I'm getting off track, but JetBoost is amazing. You should check it out. But one thing that Chris did tweet about was he built a Chrome extension. He posted, he was like, how many people use Webflow and they wish that the navigation, the breadcrumb bar at the bottom of Webflow was at the top. And if you've used Webflow, you know, at the bottom, if you select an element, it shows you via breadcrumb where it's at in the structure. So all the parent elements to it and all that stuff, and you can kind of work your way up or down, or, you know, to sibling elements using keyboard and kind of navigating there. And he was like, who would like this up top? There are a lot of people who were like, don't know, like, let's not talk about it, which was funny. But there was, he said in his tweet, for the 51 of you rebels. So he counted 51, the 51 of you rebels who wanted to see the breadcrumb bar at the top. He made a quick Chrome extension that you can grab. The link in the show notes as always. So you could add this to your Chrome, but then you could move that breadcrumb bar to the top. I'm going to be one of the people, I guess I'm no James freaking Dean. I am no rebel. I like my breadcrumb bar at the bottom.
Same here. But it's cool that he did it. And I'm wondering what else he's going to add later on, because he's taking suggestions. So I'm going to send in some pretty wild ones, see if he can build it.
It's pretty crazy. Well, especially you look at like the JetBoost integration in the panel, the Webflow panel,
yeah.
How he,
yeah.
I'm curious to see what he does with this Chrome extension piece. And it's really cool. Anyway, I think it's cool. I think he's doing a lot, especially for such a small team. And I love the work he's doing. So you definitely need to go check that out. Link in the show notes. Okay. Somebody help me out here, but at SWYX, does that have a pronunciation? I don't know. And I don't know how I would say it. Swix.
That's what I thought.
Sounds pretty accurate.
Swix. SWIX. I don't know. He tweeted, no code versus low code. In all caps, we've had this conversation before here. It doesn't matter. His take on no code versus low code debate floating around the blog-o, tweet-o sphere, he said, is something I heard about from Lacey on Visual Dev FM, which is awesome. And agree with strongly, stop sweating the semantics, start creating. Couldn't agree more. And, you know, just make with it. I thought it was really cool that he posted about that.
Yeah, I thought it was really great and really cool. I mean, he's a, you know, software engineer. And so he's looking into this space, and that was really encouraging. And it makes me excited that he can help promote, you know, no code, low code solutions and to other software engineers, and that we're not pitting it against traditional, you know, development. So I thought it was really great.
That's something I found pretty interesting, is I've seen more and more software developers. I used to think that, maybe not even think, I saw like a lot of software engineers were kind of pushing back against no code because they kind of felt it like hurt their job or what they do for a living. But I don't think that's the case. And I started to see more traditional software engineers buy into no code, because I was talking to someone last week that leads engineering at a startup, and they said, you know, no code is just another tool in your tool belt. Just like everything else, just like all the other languages, just like all these other, you know, tools and frameworks, like no code is just something to help you speed things up, build your MVPs quicker, build your products quicker. And so it's cool to see like actual traditional software engineers buy into this as well. So shout out to him.
No, I loved it. I love the tweet. And I think we all here agree with him. I don't care what you call it. Just whatever you do, do something with it. So that's what matters the most. And that goes right into our CNBC article that I think a lot of people have seen. There was an article on CNBC about no code. So maybe no code has officially jumped the shark now. I don't know. Like maybe it's sold out. No, I'm just joking. But CNBC did post an article about how there is a deficit of developers and coders. You know, we're running in a deficit, and we need more tools. And the way to do that is with no code tools. And they talked about how some companies are, having their own hackathons to have, you know, their own teams build tools without having to have these huge teams and having to develop in a traditional way. It was a really great article. And I think it's probably an article you've read before. If you read this one, you've probably seen this in a few places. But it's cool that it's kind of starting to bubble to the top, and you're kind of seeing it in more mainstream areas, which is awesome. So if you follow MakerPad at all, Matt and I were on MakerPad Live talking about today's podcast subject. So link in the tweet. We're not going to talk about that a lot right here because we're about
to cover. But shout out Tom for inviting us.
1,000%. And we need to get Tom back on our podcast too, because that was, yep, it was a lot of fun. It was good talking with him. Tom's a great guy, and that was a, it was a fun experience. So thanks for having us on. Just wanted to say thank you. And then I found this blog post. I don't know if you call it this tool. I've seen this tool. I haven't tried it yet, but I want to. It's to help you. It's a low code tool, not a no code tool. It's called Buddy Base.
I was definitely thinking this is the second one, but I don't know.
I don't think it's Booty Base.
I don't feel it'd be funny if it was.
I don't feel comfortable pronouncing that one in a meeting. Like, hey, have you heard of this tool?
Oh, sorry. I could not resist the joke. If you work at Buddy Base, which is what I'm going to call it, I'm sorry, but it was just too fun for me to not say out loud. So they did have a blog post where they said, these are the 12 best no code tools in 2020. And so their list of the 12 tools are, drum roll, please. I don't know. We don't really have a drum roll. I have no sound effects on this podcast, but, they had them, they kind of went through kind of a history piece, but they had them listed this way. One, Buddy Base, which I think is, I've not tried it, so I can't really speak to that. Two, Zapier. Three, If This Then That. Four, Airtable. Five, Typeform. Six, Shopify. Seven, Webflow. Eight, Card. Nine, Payhere. 10, Stripe. 11, MemberStack. And 12, Voiceflow. So I have thoughts about this. I would love to hear thoughts from Lacey and Matt. They both are eager to chime in. So I want to hear, like, what are your top apps in 2020 that you're looking at?
For me, I think, well, okay, before I get into my top apps, I genuinely think, and this is not a dig at them, but if you're going to make a 12 best no code tools list, you cannot include yourself on the list if you are writing the article. I think that's biased right there. So let's just get that out of the way. But I'm excited to play with them. I'll check it out. And if it's cool, I mean, I hope it's cool. Anyways, Tom asked this question to us on MakerPad Live. And I think the one tool that I'm really interested in right now is StackerApp. I love what they're doing. I think we have an update from something they released later on in this no code roundup. But I think those two founders are killing it, and they're, with their small team, like, they are really shipping features and trying to push the envelope on what can be done with Airtable data and Salesforce data, and hint, hint at the future of no code roundup, Google Sheets data. And so I think that's one tool I'm looking at. IntegraMAT, I would say, is the other. I feel like we've been playing around a lot with it lately. And it's proving to be really interesting. It's got its ups and its downs. As maybe we'll talk about later in this podcast, but I think those are my two.
Yeah, I just think I laughed when it was like the 12 best no code tools in 2020. Like, 2020 hasn't been that good so far. Like, I don't know that I'm going to go start saying things are the best this early in the year. And so, I do agree with Matt of, like, you know, kind of putting yourself in there at the very top. You know, whatever. But of course, Webflow is on there. I love that MemberStack is on there, because MemberStack is built on top of these tools, and it just further enhances these tools. And, you know, we love the MemberStack guys. So, you know, I thought it was a good list, really interesting list. Typeform too. I'm becoming a really big Typeform fan. So it was interesting, and I'm interested to see what Buddy Base, I can't even say that without even chuckling.
Booty Base, you're going to think it.
Yeah, I know. I'm interested to check out their platform for sure.
Yeah, me too. So I think I have thoughts here. I kind of agree with Matt. Now, I don't know who wrote this. Like, this might be a contributor, somebody who really thinks Buddy Base is awesome. So I'm not going to, I'm going to try not to throw shade.
That's fair.
But I don't know. But here's what I will say. It is weird that they're one on their own list. I agree with that. I'm going to say it. I'll say it. But two, there's no list. Like, when I'm talking about my no code stack or the best no code tools, even if it's not like a complete stack and I'm looking to do something quick and simple, there is I'm just going to say it. There is no build that I have if this then that on that I'm using in any pro manner. If it's something,
yes, maybe a prosumer, but never like in a business capacity.
Never. And I was going to say, even personally, I know I used it in the past, but now that I have tools like Zapier and IntegraMAT, I don't touch it because I can build things even better and customize them in even more ways using the tools at my fingertips. So I don't see that there. Shopify, I don't know. Like we talked about, I think it is a no-code tool. I don't think I would consider it a no-code tool because you can't truly build whatever you want to look like how you want to look like you want and to really customize all those pieces. Just because, you know, we've talked about the templating languages, confusing and complicated, and trying to build something custom from scratch. I don't know. I think if I was, I would, and I'm curious to hear from both of you on this too. What is your current no code stack? So the client comes to you, they need a site, okay? And needs a back end, it needs a front end, it needs automation. You know, it might need forms. What tools are you guys picking out of the myriad of tools that are now available, like for both of you? Like, what's your go-to right now? You say, these are the things that I'm using, period.
So I really kind of evaluate based off of their needs, because I have some that they really don't need a lot of pages. They're more looking for some more back-end heavy lifting stuff. So integrating with something like Card might be just a really simple, quick, this gets the job done. I am getting more into Typeform and starting to push that more with clients who need more form functionality. And now that we talked about earlier with the Airtable and Typeform together, I think I'm going to start pushing those two together more. Member Stack always for memberships. I know MemberSpace is out there, but I haven't really explored them very much. So I really just kind of take it case by case. I know Parabola is one that I'm looking to integrate with right now and really love. So just kind of case by case mostly.
I would say for me, it definitely varies on what they need, because that scope can vary greatly. But based on the concerns you put, like forms and automation and all that, automation, I'm almost always going to choose IntegraMAT. Mainly because I don't know if I use automation enough right now to like justify the cost of a higher tier plan to unlock a lot of the features that I want to use in Zapier. Whereas we've talked about this many times before, like IntegraMAT right out of the box, like you pay for operations and you get all the features from the free plan to the highest tier. But with Zapier, a lot of the features are gated, which sucks. I mean, that's something I guess we'll talk about later on. Like, we couldn't share Zaps with a code block in it for okay because it's a gated feature. And so IntegraMAT's my daily driver for automation. If I'm doing anything form-based, it's either Typeform if it's standalone form, or Webflow if I'm integrating it in a website. I have learned this past week that Webflow forms are actually really low-key powerful. So I think that's my go-to. MemberStack is my go-to for auth. If I need to make it a little bit more low-code based, Firebase auth is my go-to, which I don't know if I can say that. But yes, Firebase auth is definitely one of my favorite tools.
Turn in your no-code card.
I messed up. Forgive me, overlords. I think those are my big three. I'm almost always working in Webflow for every client, because that's mainly the type of work we do anyways.
Yeah.
What about you?
For me, people are going to say I'm biased, but Webflow, I do work there. I love Webflow so much just for the power it brings and the speed I can build in with it. I've struggled, and I think I've voiced this before, I struggle with Bubble just because Webflow makes sense as some, like I used to write code, so Webflow makes a ton of sense about how it works. And Bubble is not so much an abstraction of code on the front end, you know, especially like instead of inserting a div, you're inserting shapes, that sort of thing. I struggle there. So I would say mostly I'm building with Webflow for a back end. You know, I want to choose Airtable because it's got bells and whistles and all kinds of things. It's hard for to get me. One, I used to teach Google Sheets. So Like, I've worked in Google Sheets a lot. I love it. It's going to be hard for me to move away from that. The other problem that I have with Airtable, I feel like it adds complexities to your workflows. Like, when you do automate things, the way it passes data back and forth sometimes, the way they're in arrays, like, you know, especially like multi-ref fields, if you're working in Integromat especially, you have to add iterators to flatten that out. It just adds extra steps. And I also feel like, you know, in Zapier, sometimes it keeps you from getting at that data. You just can't do it the way you want without really breaking out some sort of JavaScript. I don't know. So I'd say like Webflow, Sheets is kind of my go-to right now. If I have to have some sort of backend that I'm syncing with, and then Integromat and Parabola is what I'm using. I want to use Zapier, but every time I open it up, I feel like I hit another roadblock. And I don't know if it's just the direction they're taking the product. I don't know if it's that I'm building really weird edge case stuff. I don't know. But the more time goes on, but like you talked about, we Integromat has its own quirks too. So, but yeah, I would say that. So interesting. I was just curious to see what everybody's tech stack was right now. Like, what are you building with? What are you doing? Because honestly, I don't know. I find it interesting to hear what people use and what they focus on and kind of how they choose to move forward with some of those pieces, because I feel like everybody kind of has their own spin on it, their own take on it. And I don't know, of these 12 apps that were mentioned, I can't say that like many of them are in my stack. So I'm just curious if I'm in the minority. I would love to hear from those of you out there. Tweet us.
I guess Shopify is in my stack, but not, I wouldn't consider it in my no code stack. I would consider it in my e-commerce stack, but definitely not
right.
In
no code. Yeah. No, I'm just curious. Am I in the minority? We'd love to hear from everybody. So anyway, check out that blog article. Definitely worth a read. They do cover some really cool ground there. So worth your time for sure. Bubble had an update. So they do have a new plugin, which is from the people at ServiceBot. They created a fully featured drag and drop subscription billing portal for SaaS products on Bubble, which is super cool. I think that's an awesome addition. So if you are a Bubble user, definitely check that out. If you're building these SaaS tools, something you want to keep your eyes on. And then something that's a little different. Stacker, which we've talked about here, the folks from Stacker released a new tool. And I kind of thought that when they did this, I didn't know if they would do this. I had a hope they would do this, is that they would build a tool that didn't just work with, you know, right now they've got Stacker, the way it works, it's an Airtable or a Salesforce partner, right? Like you plug it into one of those two tools. Well, I was hoping they would eventually include Google Sheets, because as I said earlier, that's kind of my thing. That's what I like if I'm talking about spreadsheets. And so I figured it'd be like Stacker for Sheets or whatever, you know. But they have released a tool that does this, but they're calling it Toga. So it's completely different, which is awesome. I don't know. I'm curious why the two brands, and does it confuse anybody? It confused me a little bit, but
I think I've been thinking about this today, because I didn't even know that they released this. I only saw it because Parker sent it to all three of us, and that was the first time I'd even noticed it existed. But I'm wondering if the move here is, you know, Airtable and Salesforce data, maybe that's used by more enterprise clients. So they want to charge more enterprise prices. Whereas Google Sheets, maybe it's more prosumer, or I think businesses use Google Sheets too, but like maybe they're wanting to introduce them at two different price points without hurting the other's brand positioning or something like that. That's my only theory, because otherwise, like, why wouldn't you just keep one brand? I don't know. I mean, I'd be interested to see it. I mean, they'll come on the podcast whenever this craziness dies down too, and we'll talk to them about that.
And maybe it has something to do with like, when we go to Ghostbusters reference here, don't cross the streams or whatever, but like, maybe like it makes partnerships hard when you're working with two different giant spreadsheet make, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. Fair. So just curious about some of that, but definitely go check it out. If you haven't used Stacker app, if you are a Google Sheets nerd and you've been looking for some sort of dashboard portal to work with your Google Sheets data, Toga is going to be where it's at, and I can't wait to dive in and turn some of my, I have myriad sheets of sheets, and I can't wait to turn some of those into apps. So also want to just say, you know, before we jump into things, so we're going to talk a little bit today about OK4OK, which is a site that Matt and I built. And I'm going to say Matt and I built, Matt and I contributed to, we had a big team. So it was Nick Brown,
Jake Spirik.
Had a lot of contributors, which is cool. A lot of people working on it. And it was kind of a big piece for us was, you know, how can we do something for people with what we have, you know, where we are at right now. You know, you're kind of limited about what you can do, about how you can contribute, about things that you can do. And this was sort of our way to contribute in the community we live in. We just kind of, a group of us all jumped in, and Matt spearheaded the whole thing, and then we all kind of dove in. But I do want to say to the community at large, just like a giant thank you. I feel like there have been so many people in the no-code community who are doing something. Like, nobody's standing pat. Nobody is just not thinking about it. It feels like there's so many people trying to build things, trying to get projects off the ground, trying to do something to influence and better and support the community around them. So just, I think you're all awesome. And I think the work that you do is incredible. And it's so fun to be a part of a community like that. So I just wanted to say that there's a lot of projects out there. We're not going to talk about them all, but just wanted to say thanks and appreciate what you're doing. So with that, we'll kind of jump into OK4OK a little bit. Matt, you want to tell us how this all started, like where this came from?
Yeah, definitely. So I follow this guy on Twitter, Vincenzo Landino. He is a filmmaker, and he owns a media production agency called Aftermark. And so he posted on Twitter, and he's like, hey, like, I was really concerned about small business scene here after, you know, our government forced restaurants to shut down. And so all they're limited to do is, you know, curbside, delivery or, takeout. And so those are really your only options. And as a restaurant, that really hurts. You're already on like razor thin margin. So like, how are you going to survive? How are you going to pay payroll? All that good stuff. So he launched this version of his site. It's called Support Columbus Eats. He's in Columbus, Ohio. And essentially it's a Squarespace site with an Airtable base inside and an Airtable form. And it allows you to, as a restaurant, you can submit yourself as a listing on this massive Airtable base. And you can list like, hey, how can people support you? Exactly how can people support you? So can I buy a gift card online? List it. Can I buy a gift card in person? List it. Via email? List it. Where's my menu? Here's the link. So have all this information centralized, because what we saw definitely when we were pulling together all this data is that with these restaurants, like the data, the main information that the customer cares about is spread across like four or five different Instagram posts, social media posts. You have to scan the captions to extract the information. So essentially I saw this idea and I was like, this is amazing. And Ben and I are really plugged into our small business community here. I mean, like, we get coffee at a local coffee shop every Friday and just talk and hang out and work. And so, you know, I was concerned for him too. And I wanted to figure out some way to help. And obviously, you know, we're supposed to be quarantining right now. So I kind of felt like, you know, maybe building our own version of this in Webflow, figuring out some way to do it in Webflow would be interesting. So I hit up Ben, I hit up Nick, I hit up Jake, and I hit up Katie. And we assembled a team and just kind of got to work. And so essentially the site is called Oklahomans for Oklahoma. Shout out to Nick for the name. And so what it is you have all this data, filterable, searchable, and it's all listed in card format with a picture from the restaurant's Instagram page and all that. And you can see exactly how, like, everyone's saying, support local business, do this, do that. But it's really vague. It's like, how do I do that? How, like, in the midst of this chaos, what exactly do I do? And so we built this resource to essentially allow restaurant owners, they can fill out a form, kind of in the same way as the Airtable form that Vincenzo built. And they essentially, if there's a link to buy a gift card, you can buy a gift card online. If there's merch, you can go there. If they have a menu that we can link to, we link to it. Limited hours, regular hours, temporarily closed. We show these statuses. And then the location that they're in. So if you're in the mood for something and you're in a certain location, you can go on the website and filter by location, go to a location page, all of that good stuff. And just really figure out, like, how, as a consumer, how can I support my local small business scene? And so that's essentially what we built, a central resource for people to learn how to support their local restaurants, bars, breweries, and coffee shops. Those were the four that we focused on.
Yeah, we built it and, built it pretty quickly and released a version one. And the card design was not ideal. Some of just the data structure was not ideal. We were kind of in a rush to just get something up because we knew there were people in our community who were affected. It wasn't just people who were business owners. It was people who, you know, are business owners and they're worried about their employees and the people that they take care of and the people who are part of their, you know, it's essentially their family, and they wanted to make sure those people are taken care of and that food's still being able to put on the table and they're not without. And, it's just a stress, anybody who's done any, if you're a freelancer listening to this, you're like, yeah, I mean, running a business is not easy. You get it. And so it was, what can we do to kind of help the people in our community who are in that situation? So that was kind of the emphasis behind this. And then we released a version 2.0, updated the cards and really did some work around that to fix that, and updated the data structure because we were using JetBoost. And JetBoost, once again, talked about it earlier, but what, Chris, the magic that you have done with JetBoost is incredible. You know, in the past, and Matt and I kind of talked to this, you know, initially, and this is no knock on JetBoost or Chris, you know, if we were going to do a project that just we were working on, we would just write code. Like, it's real easy. We would use Isotope or MixItUp or ListJS or any of these pieces, and we would just write a bunch of JavaScript ourselves, build this project, customize those libraries to work with what we had built, and then, you know, kind of go to town, and the filtering would work. But as we were building it, and Matt made it clonable from the very beginning, version one, and people were making copies and launching it, and there were Perth and Manhattan and New Jersey and El Paso and Tennessee and Denton, Sydney, Texas, Australia. And Sydney, Australia, yeah,
Düsseldorf, Germany. It's insane.
As for their community, really amazing and super humbled that people are using it. But as we got through V2, it was kind of like, okay, well, how do we do the filtering and make it approachable, like where people can use this? And JetBoost, the onboarding, the walkthrough, when you set it up, one, it's fun. Like, it's fun. Like, I want to do it over and over again. The animations and the pieces, like when it checks to see if you've installed things correctly and added the right classes and published your project so it knows that everything's going to work. And so, you know, you get the fun animations, the different pieces. It's kind of a nice pat on the back. Feels good. It's really easy. We felt like it was easy for other people to implement, and it has been. I don't think we've had a lot of people who are like, how do I get JetBoost to work? I feel like that's not been an issue at all. So that was a challenge. And then the other piece was, it meant we had to change fields so that those JetBoost filters would work, because JetBoost will only work on, one of the drawbacks is only work on something that's a referenced field. So if you one of the good things about code is, like, you can literally select things without them having, like, they could just be switches in there. They don't have to be a reference field, or they could be an option field in Webflow. So it presented some challenges because we had to have multi-reference fields. And if you've played with Webflow at all, and you've played with Zapier and Integromat at all, you would know that it's really hard to set multi-reference fields in Webflow. And in fact, people just basically say, no, you can't do it. And I have, I think we talked about this before. I made a video, Tossel at MakerPad made a video. There's been a few out there where you can say, okay, well, if I have two reference fields, I'm going to set every time. I can set two, but like if you wanted to set three, you'd have to go change something. If you wanted to set four, you'd have to make another change in your automation. And then if it was down to two, so like it's hard to automate. You had very specific structures that go around that. So Matt and I decided to, as we were working on this, it was late at night. I don't even know what time it was. We started like 7 or 8, but then like,
it ended up getting late because it took way longer than we, I think, either of us expected. Cause I remember at the beginning, you said in Slack earlier that night, you said, quote unquote, this should take less than equal than sign less than 1 hour.
It should have.
And it took many hours to figure this out.
It should have. It should have only taken that. We ran into some problems. So, Lacey, I really wish that we would have had you on this. And I also wish that we would have streamed it or made a video out of it, because it was entertaining as all get out. To me, it was fun. So what we decided to do is we were like, well, who can make it happen first and what tool can it happen in? So I took Zapier. Matt took Integromat. We started hacking. We were on a Zoom call and we just start trying to figure out how to do it. And I had written some JavaScript previously, so I broke that out. And that was part of my solution, was to make it like a code block in Zapier. And that would ultimately do the magic trick and make it work, because you kind of have to use, in both tools, I'm going to make some videos on this, but on both tools, you kind of have to use switches. So if this field is true, or if this field is whatever, we're going to switch it and replace it with the ID value of the multi-reference. So that all happens really easily. But you have to, they got to be in quotes. They have to have commas after them. They need a space to space. So they're all, working correctly. But then you have to be able to take a space and a comma off the last one, because you don't know how many they're going to be. And so I wrote JavaScript to do it. And some of the way the JavaScript had worked before for me in Zapier, it wouldn't work anymore. So the way the outputs were working, it just quit working. And it was code like in Zaps that worked that morning, still working today, but if I take that same structure and pulled it into a new code block, would not work. So that became a thing. And then Integromat, not the best documentation. So Matt was on the other end having to literally,
man, honestly,
try again.
Zero documentation. This is not a knock on their support. I just think they need to put a better emphasis on support, because I think I've only filled out one support ticket, so I'm really not, I can't be judging them based on what they built. But they take like a while, probably one sentence of an answer. So it's kind of like you just kind of figure it out for yourself. But it worked out in the end. Yeah, I think we figured it out for the most
part. But we figured it out. We have it working both in Zapier and in Integromat. So we're going to show you how to do both of those in a video soon, when life calms down just a little bit. But one of the things that Matt ran into was, which I thought was, it was a pain point for him, which was in Zapier, what's really cool is you pull in sample data in that first step from a form submission. They basically, it fires on a webhook, but what they do is when they set that up, they make one call to Webflow, and they pull in one set of data. So you fill out the form one time, and then you can run all these automation steps over and over and over again on the same data without filling out the form. With Integromat, you couldn't. So Matt's over there making all these adjustments and having to fill out the form over and over and over and over and over again. So I would just, we're on a Zoom call, and I would hear this, and I hear Matt like typing and speaking into the form, test this, that, the other, test this, X, Y, Z, submit. Dang it, no, that didn't do it. So you have to go back and change the Integromat scenario, and then he'd have to fill out the form again. I had the benefit where I did not have to fill out the form 80 million times, which made life easy for me. And so I ended up winning the race because of that. Is not reflective of skill at all. But then I thought,
it's pretty reflective of skill as well. You are a seasoned vet when it comes to automation.
No. It was fun, because it was one of those things where we were building, and I finished on mine. I was like, well, hey, we'll just use Zapier instead of Integromat, because you can share a Zap now. And so we go to share a Zap, and code blocks, you can't share a Zap that has a code block in it. And I don't know why. It's not like...
Is code block a paywalled feature? Is that what it was?
I don't think it was paywalled. I just think if you have a code in your step at all, you just can't share it, which is a huge blocker. I don't know why. I have some guesses, but it really baffled us. So we're like, well, we can't use Zapier because I built this whole thing that works with this and we can't share it widely and make it widely available. And it's the sad part is it's literally three lines of JavaScript, two lines that do the work and one line to return the value. And that is it. It is three lines and they're, it's probably all told less than like you could tweet it three times in one tweet, probably like it's that few characters. Right. So, I don't know. It was definitely weird. And I ran into a lot of things with Zapier where like I was trying to, like you would say finish editing and it does the whole spin thing and it shows you the value. I kept having to click out, click back in, and you know, not being able to share. And then the Webflow, create a Webflow item didn't work. So it literally had to turn around and use the webhook piece to make an API call, which we still could have worked with, but as Matt said, that's a premium feature. So people would not only have to have a Zapier account, but they'd have to have like a paid higher level Zapier account. So ended up going with IntegraMAT because IntegraMAT also allows you to export blueprints. So once you build a Zap or a scenario in IntegraMAT, you can literally hit a button, export that scenario and other people can import it and then just attach their accounts. Sometimes you have to remap things because it's finicky. Sometimes you don't. I don't know why. Would love to give you a good answer, but I can't. But at least gives people a really good place to start and makes it a lot easier on the automation side. So was fun to do. And then we did some fun hacks with Webflow Forms, which was fun. And we had dynamic select fields in Webflow, which was super cool to do. And it's worked like a champ. So
that hack was really interesting because it's easier to see this. So if you go to, we'll have links to this in the show notes, but our V1 had a form, both versions have a form, but how the form is actually built matters a lot. And so the V1, we have a select field that's just, you know, a native Webflow select field. And then the ID comes from the CMS item ID. And so what you'd have to do is you'd have to go to your CMS, grab the item ID for a location. Let's say you have a location called Plaza District. That has an ID of XYZ or something like that, something really long. You have to go into the CMS, copy that, paste it into your, or go into your form, go to this panel, paste it into your value. And you have to do that for every location. And it's like, it's not hard, but it just takes a lot of time. But like that Ben found, which is essentially just like, I never would have even thought of this, but it's like creating your own invalid HTML and closing it and with some more invalid HTML to make it work. Again, we'll have images and all that for you to check out what he did. But essentially, this new method allows you to get rid of all that copy paste process, or at least going from this area way over here to your select field. This is much more scalable. You can add a new location in literally 10 seconds now versus a minute. So it's a little trick. I think that could be its own little hack that everybody could use. It's nice for scalability purposes.
Yeah, I need to make it clonable. But essentially what I did is I took a select field. So I just built a select field. We were using SelectJS, but it works without it. So you don't have to use SelectJS. You can use native select field in Webflow. And so you put it into your form and you can publish it and then go and grab the actual HTML. So it's open select and then, you know, close select, grab all that code in between and then go back into Webflow and put in an embed block and right beneath your select field, delete your select field because you don't need it anymore. And then what you can do is in that embed block, you put in the code and you just take, all you would take is the opening select piece, which is the name, the ID, all the different pieces, the, you know, whatever. And then there's one option to one option open, one option close, which is choose one, select whatever, which is the default that shows. And then I deleted everything else and put in at that point, put in a collection list. And then you can put an embed in each collection list item and then put in an open option, close option. So you paste the code. Once again, I'll make a video on this because it's probably hard to follow audio only. And then, but for your values and for the name that shows, you can use dynamic data from the CMS, which is cool. And then you just add another embed below the collection list and just do the slash select. And it all shows as invalid and it looks weird in the designer, but when you publish it, it works like a champ. And that means you can just add a new item in the CMS, copy the ID that's right there in the CMS, paste it into a field. Boom. Now that value is getting passed through without you having to go mess with the form at all. Form is set. You don't have to touch it again, which is just fun. So we have videos we owe you, like we feel like. So next week.
Many videos.
Yeah. Next week for sure. We'll try to get out videos on the multi-reference and on this form hack, just so everybody kind of has that in their hands and knows how to use that if you want, because we don't want to be keeper of the keys and of the knowledge. We want to share what we know. So we'll try to get that into your hands. But that was okay for okay. Please go check it out. It's webflow.com/website/okay for okay. So if you want to, link in the show notes, but if you want to clone this, you can go there and clone it, make a version for your city, try to help local businesses and do what you can. So that is okay for okay. Next week, I'd love to tell you what you're doing, what we are doing, but we're kind of flying by the seat of our pants right now. So more details to come, but we'll be back next week with another episode. And it's just fun to do this again. I have missed Matt and Lacey's face. What's funny is we literally set up to do this, and I think every one of us screwed up the recording before we ever got started. And so we had to keep stopping and starting because even just taking a week or two break, it's funny how it breaks your stride and your all the muscle memory from doing it. So, but glad to be back doing this. Matt, Lacey, anything else to add?
No, I mean, I think it's just really great that y'all built that for Oklahoma and that other people are using it. And I'm really encouraged by that and encouraged by everyone who's coming together and using the skills and abilities that they have to help out. And so it makes me just very proud of you. So both of you, I think it's a great job.
Thank you. That's the hardest part. People keep saying, like, you did a great thing. And I appreciate the compliment. But I'm like, I don't know, I built another thing in Webflow, so I don't. I still feel like I didn't do enough. Yeah.
It's not like a sacrifice. It's not like we're like any of the people on the front line, like, fighting the fight. You know what I'm saying? Like, those are the people that deserve the recognition and the applause. So yeah. This is more fun for us than anything.
Yeah, and on our end, we're still trying to figure out how it's a podcast. Maybe we could do more. We have some conversations that we need to have, I think, about what we can do as this drags on to help support people who are on the front lines. I don't know what we can do, but we'll keep thinking about it. We want you all to stay safe. Please stay the freak at home. don't social distance. Don't get out and do anything to put yourself in a place where you're vulnerable or put other people in that spot, you know. For those of you who live in rural areas, good for you. I'm glad you can get out and kind of do things. It's cool to be able to do that. Like I know Matt has some of that ability, and not that he lives in a rural area, but has the ability to get there. I know my brother has been posting videos of him and his son four-wheelers, and I'm like, oh. Here in my house in the city, locked in between us, that sure does look appealing. I wish I was doing it.
Wish you were here, but I'm glad you're not.
Yes, that's right. That's right. So everybody stay safe, stay healthy, and we'll be back with another episode next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye. Peace.
Thanks for listening to visualdev.fm. You can find us on your favorite social media platform at visualdev.fm.